In this episode of the Smart Community Podcast, we hear part two of Zoe's interview with Cornelia Levy-Bencherton and Mike Barlow. In the previous episode, part one, Zoe and Mike and Cornelia discuss the power of smart communities to engage citizens, which can lead to a more effective and empowered democracy. They also shared how they see the US embracing the smart city space and gave some great examples of smart concepts being implemented there. If you haven't yet listened to part one of this interview, go and do that before listening to this episode. In part two, Cornelia and Mike tell us about their book, Smart Cities, Smart Futures, Showcasing Tomorrow. They cover the future of work and the opportunities and challenges that come from the range of generations in the workforce right now. Zoe, Mike, and Cornelia also discuss blockchain and the concept of data as labor, and why smart cities and smart communities need to be part of smart regions in order for them to be good for the smart people that live there. So we pick up part two of this conversation where the previous episode left off, talking about the need for transparency and citizen engagement in smart cities and communities to avoid backlash from the community. As always, we hope you enjoy listening to this episode as much as we enjoyed making it.
Welcome to the Smart Community, Smart Regions, Smart Towns, and Smart Cities. It's where we live, work, and play with smart communities. The future starts today. Big data, smart mobility, emerging trends galore. The Smart Community Podcast is what you're looking for.
It's important to remember that the loudest voice is not always the smartest voice. So you have to be careful not to be influenced just by somebody who makes a lot of noise, by somebody who makes the most sense.
And that's why that engagement piece is so important, to have those different channels, because not everyone is going to be communicating in the same channel, but actually using those channels more effectively and aggregating that, the information and data and the voices, so then we can actually have a smart solution at the end of it. Because yeah, you're so right. A lot of the time the loudest voices are loud for a reason and not necessarily a smart one. So yeah, no, I totally agree.
This is what's so nice about this topic, is that it just inspires these wonderful, passionate conversations and discussions. And, I feel like we could talk about this for years, because this is one of those, it's not a problem, it's a challenge, and challenge is an opportunity. So we have an opportunity here to work on this for 30 or 40 years. And I know certainly that that our kids want that to happen, or actually our kids want me to shut up and let them solve the problems. But
it's something that's very real. It's not abstract and conceptual and in the idea world. It's something that's very real that we all experience and that we're all involved in. So it's real.
And I think, to your point, Mike, as a young person, on your point of bringing our children or the younger generation into this conversation, and it's so important, and that's kind of what we've been, that's what I wanted for the podcast, have all different voices. And it's not to say that one's better or worse, or, more informed or less informed or more educated, all this kind of stuff. We need all of those voices, and that's why I love this. Well, this is why I created the podcast, so we can actually have those conversations, because there's so many different backgrounds that come into it. But yes, Mike, what were you going to say?
I can't remember. That's the great thing about growing old. But thank you. I agree with you completely. As I say to Cornelia very often, I agree with you completely.
And I love that. I love it. I love being agreed with. I can't get enough of that.
You can tell we enjoy this.
Yeah, and it's so good to enjoy this, because as much as it's real, it's tangible, but it's also exciting about what possibilities are. And I think if we can collectively get excited, then we can really, solve or work towards, or because I don't think there's necessarily, I don't think you solve a city, you know what I mean? It's like there's challenges that you're going to face, and it's going to be a continual evolution of what's of these challenges and solving them. And then the new ones will form because you'll create this ripple effect, and then that will solve, And I just think, particularly with mobility, like the example you gave, it's such a good example because, and you articulated it much better than I have been trying to, is that mobility really is the backbone of our cities and communities and regions. And if you can enable people to be mobile in both a physical and digital sense, you can really open up the opportunities, which increases healthcare access, increases access to jobs, increases prosperity, and reduces those things that we're we're not so keen on, which is infant mortality rates, like you were talking about, and people not being able to access education and those type of things. So I think it's such an important topic, and I'm really glad that we're having this conversation.
Yes, I absolutely spot on. I really believe very strongly that mobility means self-determination. If people are mobile and have access to mobility, they can exercise their self-determination. They can go where they want. They can do what they want. It's very, very important.
Our ability to move around is synonymous with our sense of self-worth and our self-determination. And by now, you'd think in the year 2019 that we would have made a little more progress on these problems. So I think we've made a lot of progress, but not enough. And so that's something in the future, and I mean the near future, cities really need to work on is mobility, and mobility for all. Accessibility, universal accessibility, should be part of every city's credo, depending on how you pronounce it.
We've talked a lot about mobility, which has been amazing. But let's move on to the next question, which is, what are some of the projects and things that you're currently working on right now? So obviously you've written a book. So tell us all about that and some of the other things that you're working on right now.
Well, what I'm very interested in right now is the gamut of and a range of populations in a city, similar to the gamut and the range of population that exists in the workforce. We have currently a multi-generational workforce of perhaps five different decades of age groups. And the same way, we have different decades and age groups in a city. And all of these segments and cohorts need to be addressed. They have distinct needs, and they all need to be addressed. So I'm very fascinated by the overlay of the workforce population and the city population, and how all of these different cohorts and segments have distinct needs and need to be addressed.
Mm.
Yeah, it's a situation that I can't remember having a workforce with four different generations in it at any other point in my life. What that's worth. So for instance, when, usually in a workforce, you go into a job and there'd be young people and middle-aged people. Now you have young, middle-aged people, older people, and very young people. And in some cases, you have very old people. So you've got this, and I realize I'm treading on the dangerous ground here by not using totally PC language, but since I am one of those older people, I feel, crusty enough to be allowed to say that. But what I'm trying to say is that this idea of, as Cornelia was saying, of blending multiple generations, all with their own views of the universe, into a single workforce, and having that workforce work together and collaborate and produce happy economic results, that's a real, real challenge that we're only beginning to grapple with now. And the idea, for instance, of continual learning, where it's nice to have a degree. But as we know, new software languages are being invented like practically every 2 hours. There are literally thousands of software languages and thousands of platforms. It used to be that there were only two platforms. You could use Windows or Linux. Now there are thousands of platforms. It's insane. And people need to keep up with those by learning, not just once in college or in trade school or something like that, or going back to get a certificate. They need to be learning like over the weekend. They need to be, if someone says, you need to learn Ruby on Rails, you can't say, well, I need to go back to school for that. You need to jump on it and learn it, start learning on Friday so by Monday you can have a conversation about it. And that's not an imaginary, that's real.
Yeah, we have such a range of people in the workforce right now. For example, we have millennials. Employers are complaining that the millennials graduate from school, college, and they're totally unprepared for the workforce. So they need to be trained again. They don't know how to run a meeting. They don't know how to make an agenda. They don't know how to get along nicely with people and play in a team. So the employers feel that it's a risk. They need to educate and help the millennials be successful on the job. But it's very risky to provide them with training because they'll up and go to another, take the training and go up, get out of there and go to another company and use it somewhere else for a higher salary or whatever. They're very, it's not a reliable workforce in many ways. On the other hand, you have another cohort in the workforce, the Gen Xs, where the employers are less likely to want to train them because, well, they're older. However, those people are much more stable, are less likely to move, take the training and go elsewhere and use it. And they're ready to lead. They are actually people who are quite stable and will benefit from any learning or coaching that an employer can provide. So it's a tricky time for firms, for employers, and for the workforce also, because there's so much going on. And of course, everyone is being disrupted by technology. People don't know if they're going to be able to keep their job or not. There's so much competition from foreign workers who perhaps earn a lot less. And then threats from automation and artificial intelligence. And the workers are experiencing a great deal of anxiety and stress. So with all of that, there's a lot of problems and areas to be fixed and to be solved and all of that.
Let me just jump in. And so here's the beginning. Here's Zoe. Now we're going to start arguing. So actually, our kids are millennials. And in many ways, they are better suited for the modern environment, the modern workplace, than, for instance, people of my generation. I'm a baby boomer. So part of the issue isn't so much that the millennials don't know how to work in a workplace. It's that people like me don't know how to supervise millennials, because millennials have very different values, thank God, you know, than baby boomers, and certainly than my parents, you know, who were, you know, from the world's, what do they call that? Oh, the Depression era people. People who grew up in the Depression, which was through no fault of their own, had a very, very different attitude towards life than people like me who came of age in the 1960s and 70s. And, you know, that's the reason why we rebelled and grew our hair long and smoked pot. But now that we're older, we have those same issues where we're trying to tell the millennials, oh, you know, you should do it our way. And the millennials are saying, quite rightly, because they are our children, they're like, thanks, Dad, but I can do this myself. I don't need your advice. So, but that being said, you know, as an economic entity, I still need to be in the workforce. So here, you know, people of my age are, and as Cornelia said, and this really is a huge issue that hopefully smart cities and smart communities will deal with. This idea of multi-generational, you know, at least four generations working alongside each other in a typical modern workplace. This is huge. This has never been seen before. It'll be wonderful to see how we deal with this. Wonderful, scary, and occasionally bumpy.
Here's a real life example for you. I was at a dinner party recently, and there was some very wide range of people around the dinner table. Anyway, there's one guy there who said that he was 38 or 39 years old, and he was having a hard time with quote-unquote millennials at his firm, people younger than him who had just arrived in the firm, because he felt he had seniority, because he was a little older and had been with the firm for a longer period of time and perhaps had more experience on the job and in his profession. But the millennials treated him like an equal. And he said, they're not my equal. They have no sense of hierarchy or respect for others, respect for people who are senior to them. I thought it was fascinating.
Yeah, exactly. Because it's so funny is because, of course, in the 1960s, you know, when I was in my 20s, what was I fighting against? The hierarchy, right? We called it the man. We resisted authority. And so now we're giving people trouble for resisting us because now we're the authority. So it's a comedy. It's like it's the human comedy playing out. In the old days, you know, we would have retired, but because no one is allowed to retire anymore, you know, let me put it this way. Most of us cannot afford to retire. So I'll be working and, you know, as long as I can. And that means that I have to be, you know, ready to work with people who are, as Cornelia said, Gen X's, millennials. And what's the next thing after? And Gen Z's, yes. You know, it's on us. It's like it's on everyone to try to figure out how to work together. You know, diversity really has a new amazing meaning. You know, kind of when we used to say diversity, we were talking about race and ethnicity and gender, and now we're talking about age. And it's fascinating. It's wonderful, fascinating, and scary.
Well, being a millennial, I can tell you what I think.
Feel free. Yes, lay it. It's your
Please,
turn now.
Yes.
So I'm a bit of an older millennial. I think the term is elder millennial. I think I'm even between an elder millennial and a new one. Anyway, I think that millennials get a bad rap, and I think Gen Z's will get the next one. But from our perspective, and again, we're all different. That's the other thing too. But we do, I feel, have this strong passion and purpose drive. And I think a lot with employers, that's a little bit challenging to take, because we'll give 100% if we're super passionate about something, and we get really annoyed when if you're in a job and say there's other people in that job that aren't doing that, but you're giving 100%, but because you're younger, you don't get taken seriously. You haven't been there that long, but you've got these ideas and you can understand, well, you feel like you can understand what's going on because you've already, you're living and breathing it, you know, technology-wise, for example, whereas you have to listen to, say, the hierarchy that are just trying to work out what a hashtag is.
Exactly, that's hilarious. Right.
Yes.
And what is a hashtag, by the way?
Right.
So I think it's a really interesting time. And I think that millennials will offer, you give a millennial a passion, a purpose. And also they don't mind doing the work as well. If they can see, you know, they don't mind getting the coffee or writing the minute notes once they work out how to do an agenda. But also they probably think that stuff is stupid because it wastes time and effort. And it was the way that we've always done it. And they're wanting to do new things. Like, why do we have to meet every day? Why can't we, you know, send each other a Slack message or something like that and just work it out from there? Because I'm really focused on this other thing. So I think that we can't just keep doing it the way we've done it. Otherwise, yes, millennials won't fit in, but I don't think that they should. I think that we need to start adapting and changing because millennials will come through and they want a certain thing. Gen Zs are going to come through next, and a lot of research, you know, happening about the future of work and what that will look like. And millennials are already starting it, but other generations are grabbing onto as well because it's a better way to do things, which is you don't necessarily go to a job and stay in that job and then die in that job. You are going to be adapting and changing and pivoting. And, you know, I'm living the millennial dream at the moment. So I contract 3 days a week to a large engineering firm. So I'm an engineer. I get to do all that stuff engineering wise and in smart mobility and smart cities and all that kind of stuff. And then I do the podcast on the other couple of days. And then And people are not quite used to it yet because they're like, what? How can you do that? You know, like the drudgery doesn't exist for me. And I feel it's a very strange experience because you feel like work and life should, you should have to drudge through it. Not to say that it's super easy all the time or anything. There's lots of different challenges, but I think it's going to look very different. I think it's going to be really fun. But there's also like, I think with the changes in business models, we won't necessarily have this hierarchy or this, you know, older generation running these businesses. That's the other thing too. These younger people are going to be disrupting. So then, of course, they're going to take the training or whatever they're doing and move to the next one. But I think with the training aspect of it, they take the training and they move. Okay, that's not a good outcome per se, but they can also come back. That's the other thing. They're very mobile. We move around. And but the other thing is, if you don't train them and then they stay, they end up as some of the same dead wood that's in some of the organizations that we're talking about.
No, it's true. And of course, you know, having been around, having been a manager in the 1980s, deadwood was the bane of our existence. So I think, I mean, again, both, you know, our kids are millennials. And they're wonderful and they're really hardworking. You know, I don't know three people who work harder than the than, you know, Elliot, Paul, and Janine. So they just, those, you know, I mean, they do those like 18-hour days. And I'm amazed at their work ethic, all things considered. So it's more, I think, an issue is the challenges, as you said, and as you both said, is evolving our social systems and our business systems to accommodate everybody's needs. And part of it is us, you know, us geezers, hashtag geezer, you know, understanding. Geezer is an American expression for old person. Understanding how millennials perceive the world. And then I think that millennials sometimes think that we got it made. You know, you got a house, you have cars. You have, and it's like, why are you worried? And of course, because we're human beings and we worry about, every human being worries about the future. And us baby boomers worry about the future. One, because we like to, you know, that's, we were raised to worry about things. And since this is a podcast, I can't show you my draft card. Cornelia's heard this story a million times. Believe me, I know how to worry about stuff.
I think the other thing is, like, the way we do this is a high trust, high respect environment, right? So, and it's not like that's easy to say, but not necessarily easy to enact. But it takes time, and you're going to like there's challenges and there's, you'll make mistakes and there'll be problems and issues. But if there's a high trust, high respect environment, then you'll be able to move forward together. And I think the future of work is such a fascinating topic because I think it will change so much. And also realizing how much it has changed already. I've been watching Mad Men, which is just...
Great show.
Nothing happens in that show, but I'm just fascinated by it. You know, not to say that it's not based on fact or whatever, but you're watching that and you're like, oh, yes, that is how it used to be. And it's great that we've made progress. But then, yeah, we need to keep going. We need to keep going in that space. And I think the next thing, well, the biggest thing, and it's already happening, but in the more traditional kind of workplaces, for example, how do we create respect and trust in a digital sense? Because that's an inclusivity piece. So the mobility, so it's all well and good that everyone can get to their workplace in the city if that's where it is. But how do we ensure that people that can't get there, or, you know, why waste time getting there, millennials, you know, why would I drive to get into an office when I can do the work that I need to do perfectly well at home? But the culture needs to change that we can feel that people are there without them physically being in front of you all the time. And then how do we make sure that both sides, so it's the business and the employee or contractor or whoever, are getting the most benefits out of that relationship? And that's the high trust, high respect relationship. And if you don't have those two things, then remote working doesn't work. And I think it's going to become more and more obvious that you want to attract talent to your business, but that doesn't mean that they have to live right next door to you, because chances are they won't. But so we'll need to start looking at developing trust and relationships in a digital sense, and what that looks like for online platforms and communication channels and all those type of things, and how we can all take advantage of that, because it's even if we're not thinking socially, but just economically, it's the way that we have to go.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Future of work is going to be amazing.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think you've just described the business model. So one, blockchain, I'm going to throw that out there, because that's that it gets.
Hashtag blockchain.
Hashtag blockchain or hashtag distributed ledger. And it also gets back to this idea of data as labor. As soon as we can verify that somebody is producing output, and it could be time stamped and it could be owned by someone, you know, irrevocably, and then we're, like, for instance, what you just said in the last, you went on for about like 90 seconds. There was so much content in there and there was a lot of IT. If there's some way of having a blockchain certified timestamp on that, and then nobody could, even if somebody listened to this podcast, well, hopefully millions of people listen to the podcast, but still you would own the idea that you just came up with, which is this remote work where you're validating and, you know, and you're kind of like chopping up people's time into little micro segments, and then somehow monetizing the IP they come up with while they're at home or while they're on the train or while they're, you know, and this is my issue with Facebook. It's like, I'm writing all this clever stuff on Facebook, and what is Mark Zuckerberg paying me? You know, Zippo, zilch, goose egg.
Well, they say if you're not paying for the service, you are the service, right?
Oh. Right, right. We're not the customers. We're the product. And I'm sorry for picking on this. Is, and of course, this is a perfect example of my kids, you know, like warned me about Facebook long before I picked. I mean, I'm still on Facebook, you know, because you get where we're driving at here. And so let's start a blockchain company that enables remote work and that make sure that everyone gets paid for the good work that they do. Because it's a trust. As soon as you said trust, then I'm thinking, okay, what is blockchain good for? Well, it reduces the need for trust because it's verifying everything. And of course, there could be negative consequences of that too. But we write in our book about Estonia, which has got a system. So they've got an e-government because they couldn't afford, when they got their freedom from the Soviet Union, they couldn't afford to set up a real government. So they set up an e-government. And it turned out that that was a blessing in disguise, because they had one of the first things they had to do was establish trust by making it super secure. And so you can't move anything around in an Estonian e-government database without a record of being kept. So everything is audited. There's an audit trail of every time you manipulate a piece of data. If the cops want to look at your driver's license, you get an email. If you don't pay your taxes, you know, you get an email. Everything is, there's a seamless interconnection, and it's not only seamless, it's also secure. So it can be done. And you could say, well, Estonia has only got 1.4 million people in it. Yes, but it's a role model for the rest of us. You know, we could, you know, we don't have to do this thing at scale immediately. We can practice. And that's kind of what the smart cities, smart communities are good for. They're good for practicing things, for getting people engaged again, for building trust, and for practicing with new technologies.
Well, what I wanted to just say to in wrapping this up is that we see that the number of smart city projects is continuously growing. It's a worldwide movement. It's a global movement, and it is growing. And why is that? It's because smart cities promise a lot. They seem to provide the answers to the questions that we have and to the challenges that we're facing. So they offer a wide range of different benefits on all levels, economic benefits, social benefits, obviously the technology benefits. One of us was saying before, they're great for test beds. They offer us the opportunity to innovate and invent things in a controlled environment. And they offer the opportunity for cultural exchange. They're rich in terms of access to different cultures, to art, to music, to diversity, things that stimulate our ideas and our imagination. So it's just a wonderful field. And that's what we attempted to write about in the book. It's a phenomenal, interesting topic that is very, very engaging.
Yes, cities offer critical mass. They offer critical mass that leads to serendipitous meetings. But why is that important? It's because it's important to meet strangers. You know, that's how we come up with new ideas. And that's how, you know, somebody who is a stranger yesterday can be your business partner tomorrow, or your friend, or your, you know, your life partner. There's so much that it's so important that we put ourselves into situations where we meet new people and where we confront the strange and the different, and we confront the alien. And cities are the perfect laboratories for that. They're the perfect places to live. They're living laboratories. They're petri dishes for people. But that's a good thing. And that's one of the reasons why this, you know, people have been leaving the farm for 6,000 years. Ever since farms were invented 6,000 years ago, people have been trying to get off of them. And, you know, cities is where they go. And that's one of the reasons why the, you know, the population of the Earth, inescapably, we are becoming an urban planet. From 1950 to 2018, the urban population jumped from 751 million to 4.2 billion. By mid-21st century, two-thirds of us will live in cities. Cities will grow in size and scale.
The future is in cities.
Yes. The world will have more than 43 megacities with populations of at least 10 million. Clearly, the world of tomorrow will be a world of cities. But will they be smart cities? That's up to us. We, the people, we choose. So let's work together and let's make good decisions and let's help make the planet a better place, better, safer, more sustainable, and more fun.
Well, I think that's a perfect way to wrap it up. And I think with cities being part of regions, that's kind of what I like to bring about with the Smart Community podcast, is it is about people are moving to cities, but then there's also these, you know, regional hubs, and cities are part of these regions. And so being able to be a smart city means you have to be connecting with those regional, you know, your whole region. So then we can move easily across borders, both physically and digitally. And that's where you meet the strangers and increase the diversity. And that's where the innovation and ideas really come to life, I think.
Great.
Yeah. And definitely, let's make this part of an ongoing conversation, because this is clearly something we can, you know, we're all three of us are passionate about this. And the idea of using, for instance, you know, light rail to connect cities within regions, that's really, we could do a whole, like, we could do an hour on that, because that's, all these things that you brought up are just so important and so critical.
Okay, well, where can we find your book? Because our listeners would be so keen to read it. So tell us where you can find it.
Yeah, Amazon. Go to Amazon. It's in bookstores. It is published by Wiley, the world's largest publisher of business and science books. Wiley is one of the world's oldest publishers, and they were a publisher of Herman Melville. So if you're a Moby Dick fan, you know, you'll be in good company. Smart Cities, Smart Future, Showcasing Tomorrow is available in bookstores everywhere. The easiest way to get it would be to go to the Amazon you know, your Amazon site and search for Smart Cities, Smart Future. Or you can go directly to the Wiley website and, again, search for Smart Cities, Smart Future. And we urge you to read it because that way you will have the tools and the terms and the lexicon for joining the conversation. And hopefully you'll find our passion to be inspiring, and we will inspire you to join the conversation and to participate and to be engaged in the smart city movement, because it will save the world.
I really just have one last question now. I said that before, but this is the real last question, which is, how can people connect with you?
Well, what I would suggest is that people connect with me on Twitter, and my handle is @Benchiton. And if they connect with me, I'll follow you back, and you can DM me for any questions you might have or any information that you might want to share. That'd be fine.
Perfect. I'm also on Twitter. My handle is @Mike7Pilot. Feel free to follow me on Twitter, and I will follow you back. And yes, I look forward to interacting with and communicating with everybody on the social media nut. You can also find me on Facebook and LinkedIn. So yes, Twitter, Facebook, or LinkedIn are easy to find. Just search for Mike Barlow and you'll find me.
Yes, and I'm on LinkedIn as well.
Okay, cool. We'll put all the links in the show notes so people can click away and find both of you. So thanks again for coming on to the Smart Community Podcast.
Wonderful to be here. Great to meet you.
Thank you, Zoe.
Yeah, you too. And we'll have some more conversations.
Wonderful. Look forward to that.
Thank you, Zoe.
Thank you, Zoe.
Thanks so much for listening to the Smart Community Podcast. Show notes for this episode and all other episodes are available on our website, mysmart.community. If you have any questions for us or any of our guests, you can email hello@mysmart.community or find us on the socials. We are on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter @smartcompod. That's com with two M's. If you are enjoying the podcast, please leave us a rating and review at wherever you listen. This really helps us reach more ears, so thank you in advance. As always, I hope you enjoyed listening to this episode as much as I enjoyed making it.
The Smart Community Podcast is what you're looking for.